All right, so we're going to talk about gender dysphoria today and the question of gender and transgenderism. I don't think so. If you're wanting a pretty good book to read on it and you want to know, like, deep dive into the terminology and so forth, Mark Yarhouse published a book, I guess it's now probably 6 years old, Understanding Gender Dysphoria. Comes from a more or less Christian worldview, and I think is helpful in just understanding the topic. It's not real judgy or anything. It's just, here's the terminology, here's what's going on, here's how it displays itself. Even that, though, I mean, 6 years ago, enough has happened in the last 6 years that I thought I was up and fluent having read that 6 years ago, and now I'm like, oh, I've got to do more homework and had to prep for this lesson more. Up to and including this morning, I was reading a new article. I was like, ooh, I'm going to include that in class today. So the topic is gender dysphoria. What is gender dysphoria? The definition is experiences of gender identity in which a person's psychological and emotional sense of themselves as female, for instance, does not match or align with their birth sex as male, or the reverse. This comes right out of the DSM. This is right out of the manual, latest edition. It is a recognized psychological disorder, which makes sense to me. Used to be called gender identity disorder. They found that the word disorder might be taken as pejorative, and so it's changed to gender dysphoria. But there's still a dis in there, right? That it's an acknowledgement something's not quite right, even in the word. As soft as they've tried to make it. Worth noting, statistics on this are still like being evaluated on a constant basis because it's that new. We have decades of information, not centuries of information. There are more biological males identifying as females than the reverse, statistically. And then the other group that has a disproportionate increase is teenage girls. And again, not trying to be sexist or awful or anything, but teenage girls, known for their mental stability. And how, I mean, it's a tough thing. Being a teenage girl, it's tough, right? Is it tough being a teenage girl? Right? It's difficult. So it doesn't shock me that particular niche is where a lot of this is going on. There it is. DSM-5. Lists this as a mental disorder or, again, dysphoria. I don't have any problem in principle with what the DSM, this is the standard manual that counselors and psychologists can use. I have no problem with the definition. I have some concerns about the way it's diagnosed, and I actually want to go over those just for a second. To start with, these are the criteria, 8 points of symptoms in children, not adolescent, not teenagers, in children. What would be considered gender dysphoria in a child? Here are 8 symptoms that are possible. Strong desire to be of the other gender, strong preference for non-typical gendered clothing, strong preference for cross-gendered roles in games, strong preference for cross-gendered toys or games, strong rejection of typical gendered toys and games, strong preference for opposite gender playmates, strong dislike for one's anatomy, strong desire for characteristics matching desired gender. How many of those, if you had to guess, how many of those symptoms do you have to display as a child to be diagnosed as having gender dysphoria? It is actually 6, which that part of it makes me a little bit happier that. But it could be any 6, meaning a child without 7 and 8 has no problem with their own anatomy and no strong desire for characteristics matching their desired gender could be diagnosed entirely based on gender stereotypes. What clothes you wear, what toys you play with, what friends you are, what part you play in the game. When we talk about adolescents and adults, it gets a little stranger still. There's only 6 symptoms or criteria for teenagers and adults. Incongruence between experienced, expressed gender and primary, secondary sex characteristics. strong desire to be rid of primary secondary sex characteristics due to symptom number one, strong desire to have primary secondary sex characteristics of the other gender, strong desire to be the other gender, strong desire to be treated as the other gender, strong conviction that one has the typical feelings of the other gender. I want to come back to number six in a second. How many of these do you think you need for a teenager or adult to be diagnosed? You might think, about two out of six. Yeah, so I have lots of questions about those words. Strong desire, I want to know what that means. Can we talk just a second about number six, which said a desire, or let me read it just exactly right so I don't mess it up. Strong conviction that one has the typical feelings of the other gender. Odie, I'm going to pick on you because you're fun. How does your wife feel? Okay, yeah, exactly. What? More to the point, which of you knows what the other gender feels like? I'm not even sure if I know how other men feel. I mean, I know what's going on in my head some of the times. I mean, again, and I'm not super feminist. I'm a little feminist, not super feminist. But the differences between male and female experience are real. I don't know what it means to walk across a dark parking lot at night and worry about being raped. It has never crossed my mind. And I'm a guy. Okay, it's just never crossed my mind. You have experiences I will never have. I don't know what it was like to have your first period. I have no idea. So the idea that the idea that I could somehow say, you know, I feel like I feel your feelings is so presumptuous of me. That one really bugs me. It really does. I think the most you could say is, I feel like I feel the stereotypical view of what you feel. All right, four frameworks. How do we think about gender dysphoria? Yarhouse, in his book, suggests four different frameworks, three that are typical, and then number four that he invents, which cherry picks out of all three. Guess which one I'm going to like? Number four, obviously, because each of them has something worthwhile to hear and then something to add. So we're going to go through the four, and then we're going to talk about it. Framework number one, he calls the integrity framework, where he says, look, maleness, femaleness are stamped by God onto the human person and are therefore sacred and should not be tampered with. The end, full stop. Okay. This, we might also call this the traditional Christian view in general, which will then surprise you that I'll disagree just a little bit. In principle, that's exactly right. But what concerns might I have, if I could advance my slide, in a fallen world, not everything is as it should be. I think in Genesis 2, I could say that perfectly. Like everybody's, this is male, this is female, Adam, Eve, done. We're in a pretty messed up world. Maybe things are confusing now. I'm willing to acknowledge that. I believe in sin. I believe in the consequence of sin. I believe in human distortion. I mean, I believe in all that. So, okay. Also, discounts unstable gender norms and experiences. So when you hear the preacher, radical preacher on YouTube or TikTok ranting about women wearing pants, he thinks he's in this category, right? He's like, this is what male and female is. Well, again, says who? I believe in God made male and femaleness. I don't think he picked your clothes necessarily. So I would say, okay, definitely something there to be said. I like this, but I have a couple of, you know, asterisks I want to put disclaimers on it. Number two then would be the disability framework. Gender dysphoria is the result of living in a fallen world and is best treated like anorexia or other psychological conditions and disabilities. I'm actually pretty fond of that point too, that I do think there is some psychological issue going on. I think it's reasonable to diagnose it as a psychological disorder. I think in some cases, at least, if not all, but some, it's not so much moral as it is confusion, and it needs to be healed more than needs to be forgiven in that sense. Like it's a person who needs help. What concerns might you have about that particular way of thinking about it? Well, number one, it seems to remove any moral quality from the debate. Like, are you in any way culpable? Is everybody mentally ill? And maybe, I don't know. It's not morally wrong. It's humanly wrong, like in the sense of not good for you. Like, is anorexia immoral? Right. Don't celebrate anorexia. I don't necessarily think a person who's anorexic is a sinner. I think they need counseling. Right. So this puts it in a different category, and that's an interesting way of thinking about it. And again, it sort of works. This is where I'm going to pause and tell you about what I read this morning. There was an article, a paper published from lady at Brown University, 2018, where she invented a new term that she said this should concern us. RODG, rapid onset gender dysphoria. By which she meant, particularly teenage girls, it was like 4,000% higher in teenage girls. Teenager with no previous gender confusion overnight suddenly expresses gender confusion and then is diagnosed with gender dysphoria. And her conclusion was that is a social contagion, not a mental disorder. So they took that paper down. The LGBTQ community said, no, that's not allowed. And fair enough, there were some methodological problems with the paper. Remember last week I did the Ghana study, which had 500,000 data points. This one had 256. It was a much smaller study, and it only interviewed parents, not the kids. So the LGBTQ community said, it's only sudden because you don't listen to your kids. So it's an interesting critique. But then they took the article down, and the former dean of Harvard Medical School starts blasting Brown University, saying, hey, that's not how science works. If you don't like it, publish your own paper. Do a better study. We don't take down papers that are socially unacceptable. That's not how science works. And suddenly all the Christians were like, yay, science. Wait, what? You know, and it was kind of a weird moment for us. Like, yeah, that is how science works. You know, study it. Do another study. Now do 1,000, you know, do something better. But it definitely, I get their point being, can that many teenage girls be mentally ill in the same way at the same time? Does that sound reasonable, or does it sound more reasonable that they are at a very confused point in life, surprise, and this is an interesting alternative that they hope might make them better and at the same time give the finger to their parents? One other drawback to this particular point of view is it's actually more insulting to a transgendered person than the other one. Like, it's, in a sense, they would rather be told, we think you're sinful than we think you're mentally ill. That it's really hard to walk up to someone and say, well, no, I don't think you're wrong. I think you're sick. Yeah, that's a tough sell, okay? Third option is the diversity framework. You might guess where this is headed, which would say all gender identities and expressions are to be celebrated, honored, and supported as creatures created by God in their current state. I'm actually going to find something positive in this one, if you can trust me to that, but not much. But the cons are, number one, it radically deconstructs historic human categories. Okay, again, we're not arguing with modern-day evangelicals. We're arguing with Babylonians and Assyrians and everybody who's ever thought there was a male and a woman and a female, you know, like these are things. Or, okay, hey, don't be Christian or even religious for a minute. You're arguing with natural evolution. Like, mammal gender has been around for a while. And somehow it broke down in the last decade among teenagers. Okay, so what's the fourth framework then? How do I take something good out of all three of those? This is actually where I kind of think we could say something. Number one, the integrity framework. Absolutely. We need to recognize the sacredness of gender and creation. God made something. He intended something. Gender has a sexual component, has a reproductive component. Like, there's something going on there that matters. And yeah, read Genesis. It's real. I'm a believer in that. Full stop. Number two, I also like the disability point of view that I think we can show compassion. A person who does this to their own body and suffers all that comes with it is clearly not in a good headspace. Like, something is going on. Is there trauma? Is there confusion? Or is it just a lack of satisfaction in life and you're trying to find it somewhere? And got news for you, they're not going to find it here either. You know the story in the Bible of the lady who had, I think King James says, an issue of blood. Mm-hmm. She's hemorrhaging. And in the text, it says, for years she saw many doctors and spent all of her wealth and it only made her worse. Feel like that's the story of people with gender dysphoria. that they're getting all the treatment options available and they are no healthier at the end. In fact, worse. And I feel for them. Jesus has compassion for that woman. And so, absolutely, I don't see gender dysphoria necessarily as a sin issue. I see it as a something has gone wrong here issue. And we really need to help these people. There's a reason John Hopkins stopped doing it. Like, they were one of the first to do it. And then they're the first to say, we can't do it anymore because the rule for doctors is do no harm. And this thing is not helping people. Yeah. Which leads to what was the good thing I take out of the diversity framework is this sort of person exists in our society. My goal is to be supportive of them and to help them because clearly something is tragically wrong. Now, support doesn't necessarily mean affirm, right? But let me give you this little chart that I flashed up there on accident. This is from whoever this is from. CDC, yeah. Transgender students in school. Almost 2% of high school students identify as transgender. 27% feel unsafe or at or going to or from school. 35% are bullied at school. 35% attempt suicide. Does anybody like that? As a Christian, do I want anybody bullied? Do I want any kid to commit suicide? So there's nothing on this chart. Like when this first came out, there were a lot of Christians up in arms. Like, what are you trying to tell us? Like nothing on this chart I actually disagree with other than now we ask the question, should we normalize this? Like, how do we help this? I think the people that probably made the chart would say the way we help is by normalizing transgender identity. I would say the way we help is by helping, by actually getting this person help. But to the point, do I want kids committing suicide because they're sexually confused? No, of course not. I also don't like when that's used as a weapon. When you ask someone a question about transgenderism, they say, that's a violent question you're asking me because you know, look at all these people committing suicide. You should be affirming us, not it. Whoa. It is a real thing. It is a real problem. Sympathetic to that. But the only way we can help is by talking about it. Again, taking down the study because we didn't like the results. Not how helping works. We have to have some real conversations. Yeah.